Okay, so I'm going to talk on one of the pairs. So there's four pairs in total. The pairs are gain and loss, fame and infamy, pleasure and pain, and praise and blame. So I've been asked to speak on praise and blame today. But they all sort of, separate points emerge into one, so we'll see how we go. The four worldly winds are otherwise known as the Loka Dharmas. So if you look at the mentioned in various suttas, it has actually two suttas of its own, two scriptures. The Vithara Loka Dharma Sutta, which is the detailed discourse of worldly conditions. And then there's a short version as well, which is literally just the beginning bit of the long sutta. So it has its own suttas. So they go back quite a long way. And yeah, Loka Dharmas sort of translates as ways of the world, so the sort of the way the world is. And so I guess each of the sort of pairs has its own characteristics, but the main thing about them is that they often have an element that we're drawn towards and an element that we are averse to, or we try and get away from. So in the case of this, you know, praise, we all want praise, it's very, very, very nice to be praised, isn't it? But we definitely don't want blame. So we often just sort of try and push blame away and move towards, well, get as much praise as possible. Yeah. So all of the pairs are characterised by that. We try to go towards one and avoid the other. But the reason why they're sort of described as the worldly winds, so Vajragupta draws this out in his book. But you know, leading your life by these pulls and these aversions means that you're blown around a lot, because partly things that you're praised for or blamed for are always changing, so you're constantly having to move around and find things to be praised for and avoid things to be blamed for. But also the nature of them is that they are. They're impermanent in and of themselves. So that experience that you have of being praised, it doesn't last. If it did, it'd be great. You could just get praised and you'd be good then, wouldn't you? But it doesn't sort of work like that. It falls away. It falls away. So you can't sort of rely on these things. You can't just chase pleasure or pain or gain or loss or praise or blame. So what I'll do is now I'll talk a bit more specifically about this pair of praise and blame, a little bit about my own take on it as well, or my own experience of it. And I think it's interesting because I think with praise and blame, a lot like gain and loss, I think these two pairings are often the most evocative ones. They can move us very strongly. And particularly with praise, it's very easy to sort of live our whole life in terms of sort of looking for approval. We might even sort of not quite know that we're doing it, but we can just sort of subtly seek that sort of praise or approval for what we're doing. Feeling appreciated, that affirmation and so on. I mean, that's all well and good, isn't it? It's not, it's good to be affirmed every once in a while. But what we're talking about here is particularly the sort of perpetual chasing of it, the sort of seeking of it, the relying upon it for your sort of self-esteem or well-being. And so I worked for quite a long while as an academic, and the academic environment is quite a competitive environment. And so praise isn't very forthcoming often. So you'd work very, very hard for many, many months. I used to be a researcher, so you'd do these research studies, you'd collect all this data, you'd analyse this data, you'd write up these reports and publications and so on. And at no point would anybody really say, oh, that's sort of well done. You might feel very, very lucky after lots of months, you might get one comment or two as to your work. So I think I was paired with I had a supervisor, and she was a Finnish woman. She was very capable, but yeah, she didn't give praise lightly at all. So I'd walk into I'd have weekly supervision meetings, and I'd go in and sort of fish for a little bit. Oh, I've done all this, and I've done this, And then she'd be like, okay, very good, that's not good enough, that's not good enough, that's not good enough. Go away and do it again, sort of thing. And then, yeah, so the odd time that she would say, oh, that's, you've done really well there, you know, once in a long while, you just feel yourself really buoyed up and lifted. But of course it would go again, you know. Within an hour you'd forgotten all about it, and then it's back to more work. So we can, you know, and I guess I wouldn't say I was quite aware that that's what I was sort of seeking. It's sort of quite subtle, this wanting affirmation or wanting praise. But I think in a certain sense that was there. You know, I wanted my work to be sort of approved of or something. So whatever. So just sort of worth looking at, what do we... The likelihood is we all probably look for praise or affirmation in some domain of our lives. So it's just worth having a look at, oh, am I doing this for that thing, or am I doing it for the praise? I'll speak a bit more about that in a minute, because that's not necessarily... We can't sort of avoid that in a certain way, and that's not necessarily bad, but just talking about how to notice it and how to work with it. And but it also happens, this looking for praise happens in a more sort of local, sort of mundane way as well. I mean, I particularly notice it when we're in groups or something. So I've often been part of communities, or I work for a Buddhist charity as well, so we're often in meetings together. And you know when, like, people are going around and checking in, so often I'm sort of not quite there, I'm not quite listening, but I'm just sort of listening out for any mention of me, you know. it's just sort of particularly if I've helped those people that week, or you know, done what I think is a good bit of work with them or something. And yet we'll go round and there'll be no mention, you know, there'll be no mention of me. People are just talking about their own stuff. Rightly or wrongly. But and I don't know about you, but sometimes I can, if I'm not careful, I can just feel a little bit of resentment about that. You know, I can just feel, they didn't recognise me. But of course, that's a really, you know, that's a really selfish view, isn't it? Because of course, that person has their own stuff, their own complex life, and they're sharing about their life, and I'm not listening to what they're saying, and I'm just concerned about them mentioning me. And you know, I haven't really listened and been receptive to them. So I think that is, you know, this sort of seeking praise, you know, just subtly. I'm just sort of wanting approval, wanting praise for things that I've done. And, you know, it does sounds like it's not just me, but, we can probably look for that. I think that's kind of what I want to draw out here. There's nothing wrong with being praised for something. That is, you know, that is a nice, positive thing. We have that in our rejoicings and merits practices, you know, so that's really to be commended. But it's the seeking it, you know, it's the wanting someone to notice that draws out a sort of slightly unpleasant, selfish aspect in ourselves, or can do anyway. So that's what we're trying to avoid in these wins. And then with blame. Oh, blame is so evocative, isn't it? We don't want to be blamed at all. So it's worth noticing that blame and praise are always related to actions that we've carried out. But yeah, we do things wrong, or maybe I should speak for myself. I do things wrong, and I don't want to really be held account for it all the time. I'll tell you a story just so you can laugh at me. But I was clearing, I was at Padmaloka, one of our retreat centres, and they have work days, and I was out washing windows in the community area, and you know, washing a window, and a sort of slightly bumper flower pot, and you know, knock the flower pot off, and it breaks. And of course, rather than sort of, not maliciously, I didn't sort of tell anyone, I just sort of put it back together and sort of left it. Yeah, so you can just sort of conceal things, can't you? It's like, oh, that'd be all right, don't worry about that. And not sort of just take responsibility. I guess the more skillful thing would have been like, oh, sorry, we're finding out whose flower pot it is. Sorry, I broke your flower pot. Do you need me to do anything about it? They would have said, no, it's fine. But I sort of didn't do that. I just sort of avoided to own up to breaking it. And if you've got sort of nieces or nephews or children yourself, but I've got a couple of nieces. And Yeah, children learn this from really early age, don't they? They don't want to be blamed for anything. They really don't want your approbation. So, my nieces are real terrors. Actually, they're real terrors, and they're quite sort of energetic and so on. So they'll be sort of playing with you, and they'll sort of accidentally hit you or something, and they'll be like, "Oh, it wasn't me." I was like, "I saw you do it. You did it." I was like, "Yeah." They're like, "No, it wasn't me. It wasn't me." You know? So, yeah, I don't know where it comes from, but there just must be this innate sort of thing about not wanting to be sort of held to account or something, wanting to deflect blame whenever it appears. And so I can also include worth mentioning. It can also include omissions. So although it's in a certain sense, an omission is an action. So a bit like me, a failure to act, a failure to own up to something can also be something that you can be blamed for. And the other side of, well, another element is that also we can, really, really sort of evocative element is when we're blamed for something we really didn't do. You know, so you get this righteous indignation. You know, somebody blames you for something, and you're like, "Oh no, I didn't do that. Didn't do that." It's really, really strong, and it's completely self-defeating. You know, I heard a friend of mine tell me a story about someone who was saying that they would rather be right than happy. You know, like their desire to be right, to be correct, to not be blamed, is stronger than the need to be happy. So yeah, it's just worth sort of clocking when we feel that righteous indignation. You know, I heard about I've heard about sort of Tibetan practitioners who just accept any blame that's heaped upon them, whether or not they did it or not. You know, they just sort of take it on because they don't want to feel that righteous indignation that unsettles their mind. So worth thinking about. And just sort of noticing when we feel like in the grip of those winds, the winds of blame. So, yeah, how do we overcome these? It's not quite enough to sort of stand against the winds. Yeah, it's not sort of enough to just sort of try and resist them. It's a bit like holding an umbrella in a storm. You know, you sort of. You know, you walk down the street and you pretend you're all composed and you've got it together, and yet the wind is sort of blowing your umbrella around. It doesn't sort of help your mind if you're just sort of trying to sort of bat it away or try and stand up against it. The force of them can be so strong that it will sort of perturb you. So it doesn't quite sort of solve the issue of just resisting. Of course, there can be value in that. You know, you don't necessarily want to let yourself go into righteous indignation or so on, but ultimately, in order to solve the problem, we need something a bit more than just resisting, something than just standing against the winds. So yes, this Vitara Lokadharma Sutta, which talks about the worldly winds, describes two types of people. So it describes a person called what they describe as an ignorant ordinary person and then also a wise disciple, a wise noble disciple. But the ignorant ordinary person is somebody who who's sort of without the teachings of the Dharma. So they haven't really seen the nature of the winds, they haven't really seen the nature of the world. But it can also include those who sort of go with the crowd. So they know they know some of the teachings, but they haven't quite sort of put them into practice as fully as they could. So, you know, the idea of going with the crowd is just that you sort of let your habits and inertia just sort of take you. You just carry on doing things as normal, even though you've got an inkling that, the world is this way or the worldly winds blow. So in comparison, this the wise noble disciple is said to be untroubled by them. And he's untroubled by them because, or they, they're untroubled by them because they reflect that every one of them is impermanent. Yeah. So quite interestingly, it goes on to say, goes on to talk a bit more about these worldly conditions, which I just want to draw out a bit. So it says, the ignorant ordinary person, or the uninstructed worldling, turns with the world, and the world turns with these worldly conditions. So to draw that out, what that's saying is that it's not necessarily that these are objective things happening in the world, that you can be affected by them or not, but it's more that they are the very nature of the world themselves. They are sort of integral. So to be part of this world is to be part of the winds, yeah? To have praise and blame present in your life. But of course, all of these are, if you look at all of the pairs, and particularly with praise and blame as well, they're all interpretations of experience. So it could be that a person or two people experience the same situation, and one of them would interpret that situation as, say, being blamed for something, and another might not. So it's important just to sort of underline the fact that these are things that we do to ourselves. You know, we create the praise and blame. It's not that there's always blame there. You know, something happens, a situation occurs, and we then interpolate that praise or that blame on top of it. I mean, it could be, you know, that almost everybody in that situation would interpret it the same, that it's, you know, but it is worth just underlining the fact that that always does happen. So, of course, that means that it's possible to change your interpretation, yeah, because our interpretation is malleable to a certain degree. And it also slightly shows the limitations of the metaphor of the winds. So I think it's a good metaphor, but I think this is where it sort of starts to run out, because it sort of suggests that you're trying to be there resisting it, and it's like a force of nature. But actually, we're creating the winds, if you see what I mean. So we are doing this to ourselves to a certain degree. So worth just sort of bearing that in mind. And even if we don't intend on acting out of those worldly winds, they can just sort of creep in. The nature of our mind is that we have this sort of ego identity of ours that wants to appropriate things. So we can start with the best intentions, and yet these things can still come in. So it could be that you're doing very, very good work for the Buddhist Centre, and you completely want to, you're just giving of yourself, and you just want to help and support. And yet, when you're doing it, or when you've done it, you think, oh, I've done a good job, I wonder if somebody will notice. You know, just sort of, it can creep in by the back door almost. So you can't ever sort of quite avoid that being in your experience, at least at the sort of level we're probably most of us are at, or certainly speaking for myself anyway, the level that I'm at. I can't avoid that in my experience. So we shouldn't ever avoid doing things because we think we might sort of want to be seeking a bit of praise or something. Yeah, we shouldn't avoid starting it. We should just try to recognise what is there for us, what is our actual experience, where that interpretation is coming from, and then just try to transform it as we are giving or working or serving, whatever it is that we're doing. So yeah, just because you feel as though there's a bit of pride or avoidance of blame there, shouldn't stop you from doing anything. Just hold it in your awareness. Yeah. So to transform. So to transform this, our experience of, or our interpretations, the interpretations which give rise to praise and blame. Firstly, it means we really need to feel that emotion. So when somebody does come up and accuse us of doing something or gives us a bit of feedback that we don't want to hear, the likelihood is we will have a reaction, and we need to notice that reaction, really, really feel it, not try to avoid it or push it away, and then try and notice where that interpretation has come from. So why is it that I'm feeling that way? Why is it that I feel a bit righteously indignant at the moment? Or why is it that I feel like that? Yeah, it's not always easy, but if we just sort of keep rehearsing that sort of investigation, gradually we can start to untangle our interpretations and make it a bit easier to work with. So as and what we're trying to do in that is we're trying to see that they are changing, they are impermanent. That actually, even if you feel that blame, or you feel that praise, it doesn't last very long. Actually, if you hold that experience, it just sort of fritters away, disappears, and then you're back to where you started again. Of course, it may come up again several times, but it will, each time it will dissipate if you stay with it long enough. And so it's said that the wise practitioner is this person that sees through this. They see through these winds, they see through praise and blame, and they see that they are impermanent. And it's said that with that they are not touched by these worldly conditions and remain joyful and unmoved. And just finally, just want to draw out that there's these are also mentioned in another sutta, the Maha Pranha Sutta, and it talks about how these eight worldly conditions, or overcoming these eight worldly conditions, leads to awakening itself. So because they are part of the world, because they're not just sort of external things, to sort of go beyond them is to sort of slightly go beyond the world, or this samsaric conditioned world, if you see what I mean, is to go beyond that. So I'll just read you a line from that. Bhikshus, when one is fully rightly repulsed by these eight things, fully dispassionate towards them, fully freed from them, rightly sees their limitations, rightly penetrates their meaning, one makes an end to suffering here and now itself. Good. Okay, so that's all I want to say really about the particularly about praise and blame, but also about the winds. So I thought what we'd do now is we'll do an exercise for about 20 minutes, and what I want us to do is try and experience those winds a little, praise and blame. So I'm going to lead us in a sort of led reflection, and we'll just see what comes up really. We're just noticing really, seeing if we're noticing those reflections. So yeah, if you can get yourself set up, get yourself comfortable. So if you firstly try to connect with your body again, perhaps touch into that space we were at the end of the meditation practice, where we were sitting with a broad awareness of ourselves, of the environment we're in, of the thoughts in our minds. And that's the kind of place we want to reside in this practice, in this reflection. So we're not making too much effort at any point, we're just sort of sitting, waiting, noticing. And with any sort of reflection that I guide us in, we're just going to sort of drop them into that space, a bit like a stone in a lake, just once maybe, just wait and see what happens. So you don't need to work very hard. Okay, so we're going to start with praise. And so first of all, just seeing if you can bring to mind a recent situation where you felt praised. Someone recognized something that you did. You felt pride or you felt praise. So we're just trying to sort of get in touch with that feeling. And you might sort of see if you can find it in the body somewhere. So where is that sensation of praise in the body? What are the characteristics of that feeling? Do you get a sense of the sort of texture of it, or is it hot or cold, or soft, smooth, spiky? So you don't so much need to describe it, but maybe you could if it's helpful, but mainly we're trying to sort of get a felt sense of the characteristics. We're just going to sort of stay with that for a couple of minutes. Just see if you can let it just sort of run through you, really. Just let it be in your experience as strongly as you can let it. Trying to avoid any narratives or stories here. So if you notice that happening, you can just come back to the body. We don't need to work out why that happened to us so much. It's just feel it. So with a good sense of that feeling, so we're just going to drop a few reflections in now and just see what arises for you. There are no right or wrong answers here, it's just whatever comes up for you. And so holding that feeling, perhaps just asking yourself, do you want more of that feeling? If you do, what does that feel like, that desire for more? Is there a sense of that alongside the praise or the pride that you're feeling? And again, what might the characteristics of that be? Did you seek this praise on purpose? Was there an element of your experience that wanted that as an outcome? Or was it just a surprise? Did it just happen? It might only have been a small part perhaps, but just trying to be as open as we can with ourselves. Acknowledging any degree of mixed motives that might have been there. That's completely fine, very normal. is that sense of praise and pride, is that changing for you while you reflect on it? Did it start strongly and weaken, or is it quite low to begin with and feels stronger now? Do you notice that there's a change in it, or does it feel quite consistent for you? Is that emotion that you're feeling, is that worth it? Is it worth any, if you put effort into receiving that praise, was that worth it? It might well have been, but it also might not. So just exploring what that question might mean for you. And then assuming that we do seek praise in some form, what would it be like to not seek praise? To be unmoved by praise? To appreciate it if it arrives, but not to be drawn by it, not to seek it out. Just seeing if we can get a sense of how that might feel. We can just let that go, let those reflections dissipate. Firstly, just coming back into the body again, connecting with the ground. And then we will bring to mind an episode where we felt blamed for something. And just to say, if this reflection gets too strong for you at any point, you can just open your eyes and come out of the reflection. But bringing this episode to mind, firstly connecting with that feeling. So what does it feel like for us to be blamed, whether rightly or wrongly? We have to start with the actual emotion. If, where is that in the body? So what are the characteristics of that? How does it feel? And we don't need to go off into any stories or narratives about why or who is right or any of that. Just now we're just focusing on that sensation that's associated with it. and holding that feeling, the first reflection is, do we want to push that away? Do you notice an impulse to not feel that sensation, or to ignore it, or to distract yourself? Are there any other emotions connected with that? So is there perhaps anger or ill will, indifference, rejection? So alongside that feeling of blame, is there, are there other things there as well? And where are those in the body? What do they feel like? What's the texture, the characteristics? Is there any sense that you want to sort of hide those emotions or conceal them? It's a very, very sort of natural impulse. We often don't want to show how we're feeling. We're not, and again, just noticing if there is that sort of motive there somewhere. It might be quite small, might not be there at all for you. Just sort of clocking that if it is present for you. And so has that sense of blame that you felt as you bring that episode to mind, has that changed while we've been reflecting on it? Has it started strong and become weaker, or the other way around? Or perhaps it's morphed into something different, a different emotion, a different state? So there's no need to work out exactly how and why, but just noticing the change. And is it so bad to feel that blame? To sort of let that blame burn through you? It might be quite strong, or it might be fairly low level. But is it worth all the effort that you may or may not put into avoiding it, avoiding that feeling? It is just a feeling. And so what might it be like not to be affected or perturbed by any blame that comes to us? Can we imagine what that might be like? How that might feel? whether that would free us up to respond more creatively to things which arise. Let that reflection go. And just before we end, we're just going to spend a couple of minutes just dwelling in some self-metta for ourselves. So just come into your heart center. Just bringing some metta to bear if you can. And just wish yourself well. Perhaps just acknowledging that you're working on yourself, becoming more aware, and you're gradually transforming yourself. Just let your awareness broaden again, and then in your own time, just bringing yourself out of the exercise and opening your eyes when you're ready. Okay, so hopefully that sort of got us in touch with something. It might have felt a bit strong or evocative. Might not have been very much, but it could also have been a bit strong. So, thank you. So let's leave it there, maybe at time. So yeah, thank you very much for having me.